Unless someone here is secretly and exceptionally good at hiding their bullshit, I like to think we all have pretty good bullshit detectors. He torments me by tearing open the wrapping slowly, but joke's on him. There's still an ordinary box he has to get through, too. Once he breaks that open with his keys, he pulls out a bust of Batman. It takes him a second to see that it's not Bruce Wayne's face staring back at him. It's his own, thanks to this website I found that puts people's faces on action figures and dolls. Theo laughs so hard he falls over. I'm close to collapsing with him out of relief. I don't get it, Wade says. On Halloween, Theo joked one day Batman would take off his mask and we'd see it was him all along, I say. We were shooting for Thoughtfully Random, and I hit that mark. Bullseye. Once Theo recovers and gives me a thank you kiss, he props Batman Theo beside him and gestures toward my gifts. Open Wade's first. Yes, sir. Disclaimer, Wade says. It's sort of a couples thing, but I think you're more likely to freak out over it, Griffin. But don't mistake this as me being okay with you being super inseparable. I just had this idea and couldn't shake it. I tear open the wrapping paper, and all I see is the back of a frame. But when I flip it over, I see my face and Theo's face. Together. Not like a mirror, but sort of. Different parts of our features are blended together to create one face. His blue eye, my hazel, the small string of freckles along his nose, my bump on the bridge, his bottom lip, my upper, his blondish eyebrow, my dark one. It's a portrait and a puzzle. My hand actually shakes a little at the thoughtfulness of this. Wade, wow. Thanks so much. I toss the picture in Theo's lap and hug the hell out of Wade, probably for the first time ever, then sit back beside Theo. I'm going to hang it up as soon as I get home. Figured you would. Let's see what Theo got you. The best for last, of course, Theo says. Drum roll, please. We all sit still for a few seconds before banging on the floor with our fists. There's weight to the small box. I tear open the wrapping, and it's a little treasure chest. Please tell me there are mini zombie pirates inside, I say. Theo shrugs. I unlock the chest, and inside there are four winged figurines with a little note. A compulsion of griffins? I read with a smile. Thoughtfully random, right? Theo is crazy excited. Griffins, because of your name, obviously. Those little bastards are hard to find, by the way, but I found one with Wade in a thrift shop and ordered the other three online. I examine them, stopping when I see a little plate on one's back. What's this? Collective nouns just never make sense. A murder of crows, a smack of jellyfish, a business of parrots. Nonsense, straight up nonsense. I made up a compulsion of griffins for you. Compulsion works because you have those little quirks and because I made magnetic clips out of the griffins so they're bound together. Theo hands me another plate from his pocket and demonstrates by placing it inside my shirt and tossing a griffin at it so it's magnetized there. Do I win Christmas? The point of Christmas is winning it, right? You both win Christmas, I say. Good answer, Wade says.
So-so answer. Theo says.
I put all the plates inside my shirt, magnetizing all the griffins. I don't tell them I was lying. They didn't win Christmas. I did. How could I not? There's a compulsion of griffins soaring around my heart. Wednesday, December 31st, 2014. If I'd sat down with a psychic last January and she hit me with some prediction on how I'd begin dating Theo in June, I would have spent my years staging an elaborate mission to steal back my $10. Even if psychics are real, I don't think I would have survived the anticipation. Sometimes it's okay to be surprised. It's going to sound stupid, and I wouldn't ever say this out loud, but the way Theo and I came out to each other was sort of like getting caught in a thunderstorm. Storms can suck when they're knocking out power and ripping apart houses, no doubt. But other times, the thunder is a soundtrack to something unpredictable, something that gets our hearts racing and wakes us up. If someone had warned me about the weather, I might have freaked out and stayed inside. But I didn't. It's New Year's Eve, a few minutes till midnight. The party my parents are throwing in the living room for their friends and favorite neighbors is busy enough that no one has noticed how Theo and I have slipped into my room with glasses of champagne. Cheers, Theo says. Cheers. We clink glasses and swallow our first sips of champagne. It's dry, crisp, and sour, exactly as the bottle advertised. We don't close my door. In the event my parents do realize we've gone missing, I don't want them thinking we're having sex, especially if there's any chance it'll lead to another awkward talk with my dad. But it's about to be midnight, and we'll want to be alone for a few reasons. I place my champagne down on my dresser and turn the TV on so we don't miss the countdown. 4 minutes until 2015. We're going to kick next year's ass, right? Maybe we don't kick next year's ass, bully, Theo says, throwing on his best serious face. Maybe we invite it into our homes and take it out to dinner, he cracks. Nah, we're kicking next year's ass. Theo places his glass down too. He comes into my arms, holding me tight. He rests his chin on my shoulder for a few moments before snuggling his forehead against my neck, flesh on flesh. The countdown is beginning, and the freezing crowd in Times Square is a chorus carrying us into January. My chest is tightening. 4, I say. 3, Theo says. 2. 1. Happy New Year! I shake my head in disbelief, marveling at the guy in front of me. It's New Year's, and I get to hold someone, and I get to be held. I get to kiss someone, and I get to be kissed. We kiss while Auld Lang Syne plays in the background, and I keep it together for as long as possible. But then I break, and I'm crying. Griff, what's up? This song gets me sometimes. I close my eyes. I'm a little embarrassed to be crying in front of him. I love you, Theo.
I love me, too.
Be serious for 2 seconds. I'm crying.
Okay. 1, 2.
I take it back. I love you more, Griffin, Theo says, pulling me closer to him. I'm blown away by how happy you make me. Thank you for being there for me when I'm stupid enough to think I'd rather be alone. When Theo gets into Santa Monica College, and he will, because he's Theo, it'll be tough. But I apparently blow him away with how happy I make him. I won't drop that ball. I can't predict what will happen this year, but I'm okay with more thunderstorms. Today, Sunday, November 27th, 2016. I'm going to call him, okay? I owe Jackson that. And I owe you that. I sit on a bike railing, my feet swinging. It's cold and getting dark, but it's the only place where I'm certain of privacy, since my parents are constantly in my space. I wait for the time to change, and once it's 8:34, I hit call on Jackson's nameless number. I might create a contact profile for him after this. He picks up after the 4th ring, dangerously close to the 5th. Griffin? Jackson says. There's water spraying in the background. Bad time? I answer and make calls in the shower all the time, Jackson says.
Any phone casualties?
A couple, Jackson admits. And I wonder if he's as surprised by the lightness in his voice as I am. Maybe he's even relieved to talk about something that won't get him crying. Did you get my text yesterday? I'm not sure if it went through or not, but I got it, I interrupt. I actually thought we should talk before you bounce, unless you're showering because you have somewhere else to be. I don't, Jackson says. I'm only showering because I have nothing else to do. Denise and her parents already went to bed. It's weird to hear Jackson refer to Russell and Ellen as Denise's parents, not yours. Did you want to come over? I'm sure Russell and Ellen won't mind. Dry up and get dressed, I say. There's an entrance to Central Park on West 72nd. It's not that far from Theo's, but if you get lost, use the map on your phone. What time? I almost tell him I'll be there in 6 songs. I should be there in 20 minutes. See you then. I hang up, wondering if I've actually given him enough time to finish off his shower, properly dry himself so he doesn't return to California with a killer cold, get dressed, track down a second glove, and find me at the park. If he's late, he's late. I've spent a lot of the past year waiting, mostly for you. Here's hoping Jackson actually shows up. I was good on time getting to the park. Jackson, on the other hand, is not. I'm staying warm holding the 2 coconut hot chocolates from the cafe, each with 4 pumps of caramel syrup. You always claimed this was your genius concoction, like you were some mad scientist. These coconut hot chocolates were must-haves during fall and winter, like the Spider-Man popsicles were during spring and summer. I keep an eye out for Jackson, left to right, right to left. I sip from my cup and finally spot him jogging across the street toward me. His jacket isn't zipped up, and his hands are buried in his pockets. I got lost. Sorry, Jackson says. It's okay. I should have picked you up. I hand him his drink. Here, it's a drink Theo invented. It's nothing too weird, just coconut, hot chocolate with caramel. Have you had it? Please, no. Please, no. Jackson shakes his head. He cradles the cup, warming his hands, and stares at it. Theo also talked about making his own Theo smoothie, but he never got around to it. I expect him to comment. He nods and doesn't say anything. I don't know if he's unimpressed or lost in his head. He looks around. I've been here before, back in February. I should have guessed. In the second month of the year, he was here with you. In the second to last month of the year, he's here with me. I will never wrap my head around how a single moment can keep throwing our lives around. I feel like a rock being skipped through the ocean. Pain, relief, pain again, relief again, eventually destined to sink. Did Theo do his troll impression when you guys went through the tunnels here? I ask. Not here in New York, but he did back home. We have these tunnels that start at the side, go beneath the street, and take you up to the beach, Jackson says. If I remember right, the troll impression started because of your mother. She'd pick you and Wade up from elementary school before I was in the picture. And when it was nice out, she'd walk you both through the park and tell you stories about the trolls that live on the bridges and in the tunnels in the park, threatening to eat children that ran away from home. I'm really surprised you weren't more of a fantasy genre fan, considering your mom's imagination. I can take you down the path Theo would have taken you, I say. But I won't do the voices. I suck at the voices. I'd like that, Jackson says. I know Theo really wanted me to meet the New York trolls, but we had to meet up with my friends one night and we never got around to it. I don't like that he bummed you out, that he disappointed you. I don't like that you saw such a future with him, that you were okay with that disappointment, that there would be more time for you too. I don't like that he trusted this future with you either. I don't like how threatened he still makes me feel. I don't like how unfair I am to him. I don't like that I'm likely bumming you out with my jealousy. I don't like that I'm disappointing you with my nonsense. I shake all of this off. There's no point getting upset with you for sharing your childhood with Jackson. I walk into the park and Jackson follows. It's a good chance to get some air, and for me to clear it. I'm sorry I ditched the other day. I thought being in Theo's room again would feel like being in a museum, but I couldn't get it out of my head that he's dead.
More mausoleum than museum, right?
Exactly. I'm weirdly self-conscious about the mounds of dirty snow and scattered trash.
It must seem ugly to someone who lives in the land of beaches and perpetual sun, of seagulls and dolphins. It's like a guest has showed up to my home uninvited, without giving me a chance to clean my room. I've felt this way before, even without Jackson by my side. In January and February, right before you and Jackson came here, I thought I was suffering from seasonal affective disorder, like the rest of New York. Maybe I was a little, it was find a way to put two coats on brutal weather here, but mostly it was knowing you were happy and undisturbed in a sunny place, in a different time zone, likely throwing back a smoothie with someone who wasn't me. I want to keep it real with you, Jackson. I tell that someone now. I hope he believes the unbelievable thing I have to say, because that's 100% true. I don't hate you. I thought I did, seriously. But I only hated your relationship with Theo. I didn't think you were going to be someone he actually brought back to New York to meet his family and friends. I consider stopping at one of these benches, even though they're wet from melted snow. But if Jackson doesn't sit beside me, I'll be forced to face him during this confession. I hate that you also have history with Theo. And I hate that you were building a future with him. I can't tell you the last time I've been this honest. You're my favorite human ever, but I really, really can't tell you, Theo. Jackson stops walking. You know I don't hate you either, right? I stop too, but I don't face him. I look everywhere but at him, counting. 8 bars on the sewer grate, 6 piles of dead, crusty leaves that make the shape of a frown, 2 lit lampposts. I make a mental note to myself to find a 2nd broken lamppost to account for the broken one up ahead. 2 adults approaching, and I'm guessing they aren't in the midst of the impossible situation Jackson and I are now miraculously confronting, maybe even embracing. You wanted Theo to stop talking to me. I don't mean it as an accusation. This is a legit conversation, guy to guy, broken heart to broken heart. It doesn't do me any good to make everything a showdown. It doesn't make me a winner. Well, I hated your history with Theo too, Jackson confesses. I hated how often your relationship with him made me question if we would actually survive. You know, I wasn't actually supposed to come with him to New York in February. My mom's birthday was the day before, and we always spend it together. Breakfast at her favorite diner, then a movie, then back to the diner for lunch, then another movie, then back to the diner for dinner, then another movie, then back to the diner for milkshakes, and finally, a movie at home. I almost interrupt to tell him how much I appreciate his mother's symmetry, 4 movies, 4 trips to the diner, but shut up and let him go on. I never once got the impression he wasn't always a part of your visit home. But I blew her off because I knew Theo would be here and that he would see you. Jackson lowers his head. Now I look at him. It's the whole out of sight, out of mind business. I swore if I didn't take that trip with him, it was a sure bet Theo would call me and tell me you two are getting back together. I'm ready to turn away when he catches my eye. I thought maybe next year, Theo would be able to join me and my mom for the celebration. He shrugs, which I know he doesn't mean as a dismissal. He's doing that thing I've done before, where I try to shrink my own feelings, try to make my problems sound smaller to others, because sometimes people just don't get it. But I do, and he should know that. The first troll tunnel is just ahead. We continue standing there. We don't hate each other. We shouldn't hate each other's histories either. I can't shake away all of those feelings. Not immediately, at least. I doubt Jackson can either, especially here in Central Park, where I'm acting as a guide on a tour you should be leading. Our situation is like some rigged card game, and the hand the universe laid out for us is made entirely of gestures. We're some cosmic joke. But maybe we don't have to fold so easily. Maybe we can keep playing the game and make kings of ourselves in spite of it all. I step to Jackson, look him in his strained eyes, one still redder than the other because of that popped vessel. I hug the hell out of him. I hug him for him,
because he knows firsthand how love and heartbreak can turn someone crazy and suspicious. I hug him for you, so you'll be proud of me for doing the right thing instead of turning my back on him like I did the other night. I hug him for myself, because his brutal honesty is somehow saving me from feeling worthless and defeated. I hug him for all of us, because we're no longer forces battling against one another. We're finally doing something right, I say, taking a step away from him. Too bad we couldn't be this mature when he was alive, Jackson says. Maybe we would have gotten there eventually. I nod. I hate that we complicated his life the way we did, and I hate that maybe it would have gotten to a point where Theo would have felt forced to say goodbye to me or you, or even both of us, since we couldn't get along. It's one of many reasons I'm sorry, Theo. Yeah. That's all Jackson can say. I pat him on the shoulder and turn away, inviting him to follow me. The stories I'll tell him about you are good for him to hear, and good for me to talk about. It's okay that he's not as forthcoming tonight. I sort of like being in the pilot seat, flying us through the skies I know. I think Jackson and I risk crashing if he's in total control. This is a better send-off than I was betting on, Jackson says on our way out, through the very exit where you and I once took turns pissing late at night, keeping watch for each other. I didn't even think I'd get to see you again. I wanted the chance to say sorry for trying to cut Theo out of your life. I know I have plenty to apologize for, too, but something deeper is clawing at me. Do you have to leave tomorrow? You heard that right, Theo. I, Griffin, no middle name, Jennings, have asked my former nemesis, Jackson Wright, if he can stay in New York. I can't impose on Theo's family anymore. They need their space, Jackson says. Stay with us, I counter. It's not like you have school to worry about. I'm not sure your father would be cool with that, Jackson says. He will be. I'm sorry he was a dick to you. He was just being overly loyal to me. Unlike my mom, who wasn't being loyal enough, but she's in the right. I know that. My flight is already booked, though, Jackson says. Your father works for the airline. Don't you get free flights?
Well, yeah.
Look, if you want to go back home, I'm not stopping you. But if you want an escape, I'm giving you a chance. No, it's not that I don't want to stay, but I'm so ready to shoot down this next excuse. I have a question. Not an excuse. You want to know why I want you to stay, right? Exactly. You're the only person who gets what I'm going through, what we're going through. Theo's family is grieving harder than us, no contest. But we lost him too, and I feel like people are surprised that I haven't just moved on already. I don't know if that's the same for you. I don't really care about those people anyway. I have zero intention to forget about Theo, ever. If some genie popped up and was like, hey, you want to use one of your wishes to forget Theo ever existed and cure your heartbreak? I would probably make two wishes and then kick the genie in his nuts for saying something that's stupid.
You really wouldn't use your third wish? Jackson asks.
I shake my head. Unless I was guaranteed another go at the genie so I could have a total of six wishes, I wouldn't ever use my third wish, even if it left me in the company of that asshole genie forever. My point is, you get me, and I get you, I tell him. I think we can help each other through this, and even better than that, I think we can legit help each other heal. You game? He smiles, but he looks shaky in the cold lamplight. I would have to be an idiot to reject healing. You're right, that going back home would really suck right now. It'd be so lonely, and I'd see Theo everywhere. He pauses. Are you sure about this? I see you everywhere now, too. I'm hoping talking to Jackson about you might help lessen the pain, though. It'll definitely help with the loneliness. I'm sure. We're closer to my house, so Jackson and I head straight there with a plan to get his stuff tomorrow when I get back from school. As we approach my building, I quietly say, I'm sorry for everything, too. Monday, November 27th, 2016. Jackson can't sleep either. It's been almost a week since your funeral, so it's probably fair to stop blaming his sleeplessness on West Coast time. No one can sleep because you're keeping us awake. Me, Jackson, your mom, your dad, your sister, Wade probably. It's 6 a.m., and even though I should do my damn best to at least get a power nap in since I have to get ready for school in an hour, Jackson and I chill by the closed window and watch a plane sail across the dark skies. It's been 2 weeks, I say. 2 weeks since you've been gone. I know, Jackson says. He moves away from the window and settles into the air mattress. I keep watching the plane. Jackson should be at the airport now, getting ready for his 8 a.m. flight back home, back in time as he gains 3 more hours in his life. But instead, he's here for me to talk to, and, unlike you, Jackson can talk back. My dad pulls up right in front of your building. I'll let Jackson know I'll see him after school. He's tired as hell. I'm no monster. I consider letting him stay over while I'm out, but all our stuff is there, yours and mine. I don't think Jackson is going to rob me. The only thing he's ever stolen from me is you, and you were fair game. But I don't want Jackson touching my things or your things when I'm awake, figuring out the history without me there to inform it. It's dead silent in the car after we drop Jackson off. If Dad doesn't say anything to me by the second red light, I'll listen to music instead. The second red light comes in no time, and I'm putting on my headphones to listen to Lily Allen's cover of Somewhere Only We Know, when Dad catches my eyes in the rearview mirror. He speaks up. How well do you know Jackson? I'm not sure what to make of my dad's strange tone. I know Theo trusted him, I say, letting the headphones dangle. I do too. How old is he? He's 18, until Thursday at least, when he turns 19. He'll never be 19. You're stuck. Then the floodgates open, and Dad lets me have it. I was wrong to encourage Jackson to skip his flight. I was wrong to invite Jackson to camp out in my room, especially without talking to him and Mom first. I was wrong to be at the park late last night, especially when fewer police are patrolling this season. I have no idea where that fact comes from, but whatever. I was wrong, and am wrong, to act so irrationally. I know you miss Theo, but... I put on my headphones and blast my song really loud. Zombies have been on the brain today, so to speak. Not the zombie pirates, who will rule us one day, sadly. I've taken many zombie forms throughout high school. There were the brain-dead days when I'd been up very late cramming for a midterm. The same was true after all-night video game sessions or phone calls with you. I would zombie creep through the halls, unable to pass any tests or even come up with a good lie as to why I didn't do my homework, whereas you remained at the top of your game. Then there's the kind of zombie I've become now, the one who has lost everything, his brain, his heart, his light, his direction. He wanders the world, bumping into this, tripping over that. It keeps going and going. That is life after death. Today I'm the zombie standing in front of your old locker, as if it's some underground bunker where I'll find you alive. But I know better. You're dead, and I'm the worst kind of alive. I get home before Jackson's cab arrives. I can't kick him out every day I go to school, but I can't exactly hide you when he's in my room either. I look around in a daze. I can box up the things that are really personal and exclusive to me, like the letters you would write me every month on our We Finally Got Together anniversary, or the drawing you gave me on the 1 month anniversary of the first time we had sex. The generosity you endowed both of us with is too damn funny not to frame, but too damn crude to share. There are a lot of little things that I would never share with anyone, especially not Jackson. Maybe back at a time when I wanted to make him feel jealous, but not now. There's some history he doesn't need shoved in his face. Luckily, the apartment is empty. I pack up everything I can find in a single box and seal it shut with duct tape. Not to be extra distrustful, but I don't think it's a good idea to leave it in my bedroom closet, where I've invited Jackson to help himself if he needs stuff like new sheets. So I take it out to the hallway closet. My eyes fall on a shoebox. Things I took out of my room a couple of days after you died. Those items still have no business being in my space. So I drop the new box on top of it and close the closet door. Jackson sends me a text. He is pulling up any second. I get downstairs in time to see him exiting the cab with a single gym bag. I was expecting him to have a rolling suitcase, but I forget he's a kid like me who's only supposed to be here for a few days. As we go upstairs, Jackson tells me how your parents were weird when he told them he decided to stay with me. I don't know if they're suspicious of me, which wouldn't make sense. They're completely unaware that the most dangerous thing about me is my capability to lie. And that didn't start until the end of our relationship. But I'm cutting back on the lies, trust me. Being brutally honest is a freedom I never expected. Maybe your parents were weird because of how unlikely a... I don't know what word to use here because pairing sounds too romantic and friendship sounds too strong. You wouldn't know the word. Whatever Jackson and I are, it's unlikely. But at the end of the day, however concerned your parents may be, they did not invite Jackson to continue staying with them. So here he is. What did your parents say? I ask. My dad is okay with getting me another ticket when I'm ready to go home. My mom isn't a fan of me ditching school for the rest of the semester, but she trusts I know what's best for me, Jackson says, dropping his gym bag by my desk. I let out a grim laugh. I wonder what's that like. I got hit with a lecture on my way to school. I go through my clothes, sorting extra button-ups, t-shirts, jeans, and boxers I don't mind Jackson borrowing. Yeah, Gregor didn't seem thrilled I was spending time here. No, it's more that he's annoyed I did this behind his back. Whatever. I hand him the clothes, more than he will likely wear, enough that if I cleared a drawer for him, I could fill it. I throw myself onto the bed and toss him my TV remote. My nap during algebra got interrupted, so I'm going to shut my eyes for a bit. Feel free to watch whatever you want, or read, or sleep, or whatever. You're almost 19. You'll figure it out. Thanks, Jackson says quietly. I'm tempted to ask him if he's okay. But you know me when I'm passing out. I sleep talk, half listening, half inside a dream, and I make zero sense. This is not the best time to have a serious conversation, as I suspect he may want to have. I don't even have the energy to put on my headphones and play your voicemail. But the sound of the TV brings me some comfort, some familiarity. I haven't touched it since you died, because people shouldn't be watching TV when the person they love is dead. But now as I drift off, it reminds me of marathons we enjoyed, movies we hated, TV shows we watched weekly, documentaries that kept us awake, action films that bored us. And the meaningless background noise it provided so we could make out and do other stuff uninterrupted. It really sucks you're not sleeping beside me. Mostly because it would have been nice to know if I'm actually falling asleep with a smile on my face. Or if I'm loopy and imagining it. It feels odd that Jackson is now a part of us, right? Odd in the number, yeah, but I mean odd. Strange. Unexpected. It's everything you would have liked when you were still here, to kick it with us. You can see Jax and Amir growing up because of you. I hope this doesn't sound like your death has fixed our lives. I hated when Jackson said that. I hate myself for even hinting at it. Anyway, the three of us are skipping dinner with my parents tonight, because I still want some space to cool down after my dad's takedown. I hate feeling like a naughty kid. Besides, now that I'm a little more myself, I want Jackson and me to have some one-on-one time, you excluded, well, included, of course. Specifically, I want to know what was with him when I fell asleep, best nap all week, that made him a little more distant. We sit on the air mattress with our bowls of pasta and he's scrolling through the movie queue.
What are you in the mood for?
Whatever you want. Jackson puts on the second Terminator movie, but after 20 minutes of fidgeting and looking around the room, it's pretty clear we're not paying attention.
You still watching this? I ask.
Not really, Jackson says.
Because it's garbage.
I have Theo on my mind, Jackson says. I was going to ask. Did I say something earlier?
You mentioned my birthday.
Theo and I had plans back home. We were going to take surfing lessons and check out this exhibit and end up at the beach. It's weird how I won't be home for my birthday, but I won't be with him, and I must sound like a broken record.
I shake my head.
I'm sure together we sound like a concert of broken records. If you're still around, maybe you can meet up with your friends. They should be back in the city by then, right? Maybe your birthday can be the hangout you need. If that doesn't work out, I'm here for randomness. He sighs.
Thanks, Griffin.
I haven't even thought about Annika and Veronica, honestly. I'll reach out over the next day or so. I'll definitely need a distraction that day.
I get it.
Even when you were alive, events you missed felt wrong when they finally rolled around. I had to turn to people who didn't matter as much to me, which sucked. Having a plan isn't always a guarantee. It's been 2 weeks since you died, and 1 week since Jackson and I delivered our eulogies. Like I said, odd.
History. Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. I don't think my quirks are actually quirks. It's not quirky to be ready for my birthday in May because I'll finally stop being 15 for the next 366 days, leap year. It's not quirky to blame anything bad that happens in March because it's the third month of the year. It's not quirky to risk how much I'm eating if it means an odd amount of meals that day. It's not quirky to list examples in my head and get frustrated when I can't come up with enough options to make it even. That's not just the numbers thing, obviously. I'm a magnet to everyone's left side, and I don't know why. It can all be disruptive, but as long as everyone is in the right place and every number is balanced, I'm really good. 7 doesn't bother me as much, but maybe that's because I was born on the 17th. Maybe it's just because 7 is a kick-ass number. Maybe I'm making a bigger deal out of this than it really is. Maybe my quirks actually are quirks. Maybe I'm taking it out on myself because these little quirks Theo finds cute aren't enough to get him to stay. Back in January, Theo was accepted for early admission to Santa Monica College. We're sitting on his living room floor, me to Theo's left, obviously, while he opens up the latest delivery from his future home. Russell records this unboxing on his phone to later add to the Big Theo Moments folder he has on his computer. Theo pulls out an SMC-fitted cap, an SMC t-shirt, and an SMC hoodie. I can't possibly feel panicky because Theo's pulled out 3 items, right? That doesn't make sense. I know why I'm losing my breath. It's because every time I think Theo might reconsider and stay here in New York for another year, something like this pops up. An email or a letter or a padded envelope or, now, a swag box. I know he's already got 1 foot out the door. Theo puts on the cap and winks at me.
The SMC heads sure know how to seduce a guy, right?
Alternate universe idea. Theo and I are living together in a huge house overflowing with hats because I bought him a new one every day to get him to stay. Sunday, May 17th, 2015. Maybe I put too much pressure on my birthday. There are only a few hours left, and it's not the memorable day I was counting down to, even though all the right pieces were in place. I woke up to a video from a shirtless Theo from My Eyes Only. My parents gave me $350. I returned $10 under the guise of a thank you tip
for bringing me into this world, but really, I just wanted a number that felt more even. I hung out with Theo and Wade at Bonus, where Theo and I kissed for the first time, and we played several rounds of pinball and air hockey. I got some great gifts, and I haven't even gotten Theo's yet. But my favorite so far is the Cedric Diggory keychain Wade got me. And now I'm walking around Union Square with the guy I really love, while he holds my hand and whistles the Star Wars theme song. But all I can think about is how Theo will be gone this fall. I won't have him with me for the first day of school, walks in September, for a couple's costume for Halloween, for side-by-side studying for midterms in November, for pre-holiday craziness in December, for his birthday, for my next birthday. We won't have those days or every little and big moment in between once he's gone. I have him now, and I still can't throw on a smile that doesn't feel like a lie. But at least I can lie if it makes him happy. "Today's been incredible," I say. "Thanks for throwing all this together." Theo took charge of my birthday. I don't know if it's because he loves me or because he feels guilty for leaving, but he signed up for the job and saw it through. I had my doubts. He's been spending a lot of his weeknights and weekends downloading new computer programs to prepare for SMC life. I have to keep reminding myself that he's not always putting his brain before his heart. More importantly, it's not a bad thing when he does. He leads me to a bench. We sit, watching two women play chess on crates nearby.
"Griffin, I got to let you in on something," he says.
"What's up?" This already doesn't feel good.
"I know you," Theo says. "Like, a little bit. We've been dating for almost a year, and we go way back, fifth grade. I know something's up. You're supposed to be able to talk to me when something's up. If you don't, the bad boyfriend council will show up at my house and give me a demerit." "What happens when you get too many demerits?" "I'll be sentenced to an entire month without masturbation or sex. You got to save me here," Theo pleads. "You're not okay, are you?" I keep my eyes on the chess game, on the perfectly even number of squares.
"I'm going to miss you," I tell him, which is true. I know we still have the entire summer to look forward to, but what's going to happen once you move to California? We'll see each other on holidays?
"That isn't enough for you."
"I'm scared it's not going to be enough for you," I admit. "You're going to meet some guy or girl, and yeah, maybe you'll be friends at first, but it's just going to get you missing something physical. I don't think Skype Griffin is going to be enough for you."
"Will Skype Griffin love Skype Theo?" "He better, because Skype Theo is planning on loving the hell out of Skype Griffin, even if he can't kiss him." He's gotten me to smile. Screw everyone who hates public displays of affection, because I have to get my kisses in before I become Skype Griffin. "You feel better?" he asks.
"I'm sorry I didn't say anything sooner."
"It's okay. Just don't forget about the assholes over at the bad boyfriend council who would force celibacy on a 17-year-old with a cute boyfriend." Theo pulls his phone out of his pocket. "Speaking of, I should probably give you your birthday present. It's not done, but I promise you, I have every intention of finishing it."
He pulls up a video and presses play. It's an animation. There is a compulsion of griffins flying across the side. The one with feathers, my favorite shade of blue, is on the right, until he torpedoes to the left. The narrative of one griffin moving to the left of three griffins would make zero sense to anyone else, but it means everything to me. It means he pays attention to the way I move, to my favorite color. It's only 14 seconds long, and probably counts more as a clip than it does a video. But I know how much time goes into a single frame, and that's time he took away from himself for me. This clip means my favorite human loves me.
"I swear I'm going to add more to it," Theo says, probably feeling shitty because I keep staring at him without telling him how much I love it. "I have some ideas,
but I don't want to spoil it for you. Do you like it? I throw myself at him, and damn it, I'm not letting go. Saturday, June 27th, 2015. After a morning of feeding and naming ducks in Central Park, Daffy was an asshole who wouldn't share, and an afternoon eating ice cream at the High Line, I follow Theo back into his apartment, right as his family, my parents, and Wade shout, "Surprise!" He turns to me. I play punch him in the chest. "Surprise, Theo," I say.
"I have no idea what's going on,"
he says to the room. "Good job, everyone." "It's a surprise party," Denise shouts, smiling widely enough that I notice she lost that wobbly tooth in the bottom row.
"You, little lady, are a genius," Theo says. "But why am I having a surprise party?"
His mother steps over and sweeps him into a hug, rocking with him. "It's your graduation party. Griffin's idea." Theo steps back and turns to me. "It sucks that you have to wait 4 more years to graduate," I say. Theo claps his hands urgently.
"I'm going to need to ask everyone to go home so I can have the entire place alone with my boyfriend." There are a couple of laughs, but mainly just blushing and wide-eyed looks from my parents.
"Please leave all the gifts." He looks around. "Wait, there aren't any gifts? New mission. Please leave and go buy me something nice and return in a couple of hours. Thank you."
No one leaves to buy Theo gifts.
His parents offer him a sip of celebratory wine, maybe half believing it might actually be his first sip. But he passes once he sees me holding a green graduation cap I bought off some graduating senior earlier this month. Theo lowers his head and lets me crown him. Everyone stops what they're doing to get photos of Theo in his cap. Russell encourages our squad to get together for what he calls a family photo. I wonder how much of a family we'll be once it's just Wade and me and Theo is in California. But right now we're at our tightest since Theo and I came out.
"You're a mind reader," Theo tells me.
"Not really," I admit. "A lot of your confusion about whether you should stay or go had to do with not seeing high school through until graduation. You never got your glory."
"And now, I'm saying peace out before I can be declared valedictorian of my year," Theo says, as if graduating school a year early isn't a bigger win. "I'm sure Suzanne Banks will get it now, but she'll always be salutatorian in my heart."
"Check your pillow."
"Is something there?"
"If Wade is good at favors, there should be." "It's there," Wade says. Wade and I follow Theo into his room, where he rushes to pick up the fake diploma I created for him. Theodore Daniel McIntyre, valedictorian, and the most badass human in the universe. Today, Thursday, December 1st, 2016. Once Jackson gets off the phone with his mother, I'll wish him a happy birthday. It's 5 in the morning in Santa Monica, but I'm not surprised that Ms. Lane is the kind of mother who wakes up this early to call her son on his birthday. I'm impressed she beat me to the punch, considering Jackson was sleeping 6 feet away from me. I sit up in bed, thinking about how December is kicking off with a few firsts. It's the first month you're not alive, which also means we're approaching 1 whole month without you. It's Jackson's first time celebrating his birthday in New York, away from his parents. It's the first snow day from school, a cancellation we were happy to receive last night from the school board, even though I hate blizzards.
I need a fourth first.
Okay. I'm having trouble. Help me out here, Theo. You used to be so good at helping me even things out. I'm trying to guess what you would say right now. I look around the room, which you always advised was a good place to start. Most times you'd save me from the landslides of panic. I feel one bouldering through me now. I don't know if I'm imagining it or not, but my heart is speeding up faster than usual. I'm desperate for anything, sort of like when two people are having an awkward silence, and everything would be slightly better if someone said something. I got it. Today is the first time I will go out into the snow and play as a present to Jackson. Damn it. You should have reminded me. I'm meeting Jackson's friends later for the first time. You know we have dinner plans. I can't get it out of my head now. It's clicked as a fifth, registered itself in my head. I need a sixth first now. I'm in a good place if I think up something else after the sixth, since I'll hit a seventh and maybe even an eighth. And wow, if I hit all those, I will be pretty close to 10 firsts today. Hitting that record is tempting. I can't. My heart is rioting. My chest is tightening. My throat is swallowing nothing. And my fingernails are going to war against my palm. Jackson notices. But he's in the middle of pulling out his second sock, and he stops. He moves the phone away from his mouth and asks me if I'm okay. Put your other sock on, please, I say. I have to call you back, Mom. Jackson hangs up on his mother and immediately pulls on his other sock. I need the balance of two socks on 2 feet, almost as much as I need a sixth first. My face gets hot. Or maybe it's been hot for a while. I don't know. I don't know. I'm burning everywhere. The heat spreads down to my shoulders and down to my elbows and down to my wrists and down to my thighs and down to my knees and down to my toes. I want to undress and cry a little because I can't focus on what I should be focusing on. The next and last first, because all I can think about is how you're not here to help me and how Jackson will never understand what it's like to live in a head like mine, to be powerless against these impulses. Jackson, with both socks on, approaches and crouches before me, almost like I'm strapped to explosives and may self-destruct any second now. Griffin, what is it? He adjusts himself to be on the other side of my right knee. Is it an ankle thing? I found my sixth first. Today is the first morning I'm allowing Jackson to help me find sanity. He's been helping me out with grief. I push him away when it comes to my compulsions. You've been there for me since pretty much the beginning, and I've turned to you. It's hard to control something that has control over me. No one understands, but it's freeing to let someone else in to try. I'm okay. I wipe my forehead with the back of my head. I got stuck in my head. Was it an angle thing? How can I help you next time? His thoughtfulness reminds me of you. It was a counting thing. Let's drop it for now because I've spent enough time in my head already. That's the nature of having a brain that spins, I guess. I know brains aren't supposed to spin. Minds can, not the actual brains themselves. But there's a lot going on in my head I don't understand. I may never understand. And it seems silly to cling to the idea that my brain is this fleshy thing that stays in its place, this thing that behaves like other brains. I'm sorry, Jackson says. Not your fault, I lie. I can't let it slip that this particular train of thought derailed because of him. He's the source of counting these firsts. I've imagined many easier lives in alternate universes. Somewhere Jackson no longer exists, and somewhere he never existed in the first place. But I never counted on living in a universe where Jackson is a welcome and helpful addition to my life. I would have never predicted a universe where I'm actually careful about how Jackson feels. I get up from bed and look out the window. The blizzard is going strong and is expected to reach 4 feet today, maybe 6 by Sunday. You sure you still want a snow day? I'm sure, he says. I want to send my parents photos of me in the snow. I'm betting Jackson's father won't call until closer to noon, though I'm hoping he'll prove me wrong. Until then, we'll keep blaming it on work. Maybe he's up in the air and unable to call. Maybe he's surprising his son by visiting New York to see him. I have my doubts on that one. I hope Jackson isn't counting on it either. It's your day, I say. We're definitely waiting until the snow isn't pounding down like this, but I am determined to honor his wishes. How are you feeling about seeing Annika and Veronica? I'd be surprised if that still happens, Jackson says, still staring out the window like it's the last time it'll ever snow.
Veronica is always looking for excuses to cancel. She hates leaving the house. I'm sure she cancels everything now that weather is a factor.
No wonder you and Theo couldn't risk being late the night he wanted to take you to the park, I say.
I think this was really mature of me to bring that up, by the way. You owe me a high five.
Exactly, Jackson says.
We should have a backup plan, just in case.
My heart isn't trying to blast its way out of my chest anymore. Helping Jackson out is rescuing me from my own head.
Think of it as a snow day plan for your snow day birthday plans. What else would you want to do? Something you can only do in New York.
Theo used to talk about the High Line, Jackson says. I move away from the window so Jackson doesn't see me blushing. I am blushing, right?
My face is burning again.
I wonder if you brought up my name when you mentioned the High Line. If you told him how we would buy lemonades and laugh at the ice vendor who was sneakily eating popsicles when she thought nobody was looking. Maybe you avoided telling him about how we would hold hands and create stories about the lives of the people we could see working in offices. Maybe you left me out completely so you wouldn't hurt his feelings.
If your friends suck, we will go to the High Line, I promise. It's been a while since I've been there.
Jackson?
Yeah?
Happy birthday, by the way. Jackson finally looks away from the window and smiles. There's no mistaking the sadness in his smile, like maybe he was hoping to find you when he turned around. But when someone is grieving, a genuine smile is a small victory in the big battle.
Thanks, Griffin.
I don't mean to speak for you, but I know you'll feel better having these words of yours thrown out into the universe.
And a happy birthday from Theo, too.
Jackson is a little surprised, but his smile doesn't break. No sadder, no happier. Sometimes neutrality is a victory, too.
What's a colder word for freezing? Jackson asks, bundled from head to toe in my dad's coat, hat, gloves, and the scarf I forced on him.
Fucking freezing?
Jackson nods.
It's fucking freezing. I'm not sure I really want a snowman best friend anymore.
I smooth out the snowman's base.
Nope, no backing out. We didn't work this hard on his ass to give up now.
Maybe we should make it a snow woman, Jackson suggests through chattering teeth.
You only see snow women when it's a family in need of a mother for the children, but whenever it's one snow person, everyone automatically makes it a snowman.
Revolutionary snow woman it is! Some snow person will write sonnets about you, I say.
I cup the snow and begin molding the snow woman's breasts.
That's some Theo thinking of yours, by the way. We didn't get much play in the snow because I'm not a big fan, but I think if I did it anyway, Theo would have had the lightbulb moment to create a snow woman just because.
I can't think of a better person to channel, Jackson says over the howling winds.
There's no smile this time. He and I build and build, convincing ourselves not to go back inside and take a break to warm up, because it'll be too brutal to come back outside. The snow woman's breasts look more like cones, but I move on to her head because Jackson and I are not exactly teenage boys obsessed with breasts. The snow woman's head isn't proportionate to her body, just like her body isn't proportionate to her leg ball.
She needs a face now, Jackson says.
I feel guilty for two reasons. The first is because I should have done this with you and not put it off because I assumed we'd have all the time in the world once we got back together. I also feel guilty because I wouldn't have been able to be as happy about this as Jackson is.
I'll find her a face.
My teeth are chattering. I walk around for a little bit, grateful to have my knees and legs out of the wet snow. I go into the trash can, collecting items. Well, let's call it what it is, garbage, that can be useful in giving the snow woman a face. I return and drop our options, everything colorful against the white snow. Jackson immediately reaches for the shard of dark green glass from a broken Heineken bottle.
Really? Are you about to shank her?
I take the glass from Jackson and give the snow woman her smile, well, smirk.
Not bad, Jackson admits.
Don't doubt my vision again.
Jackson uses the filthy green top from a water bottle as the snow woman's nose. I empty out a